I'm delighted to have Kate Jones with me today. She is a leadership and life coach who's living in London and she runs a business called Neon. Today, I wanted to talk to Kate about this idea of new beginnings and some of the ways in which she helps people through these new beginnings. So thank you for joining me today, Kate. It's lovely to meet you.
Thanks for having me.
So do you want to just tell us a little bit? In fact, just tell me a little bit about this idea of new beginnings. Are we talking like new beginnings? Obviously, it could be divorce or a new start in life or redundancy. What is it? Can you describe it to me?
Yeah, well, so I'm particularly passionate about working with people in midlife who are wanting to embark on new beginnings. And sometimes those new beginnings, as you say, are because something major has happened in their lives or in their careers that has forced, if you like, a new beginning on them. So it might be divorce or the end of a relationship or some kind of fundamental change in family circumstances. But it could also be a change of job or the loss of a job or being made redundant. It could be some kind of personal or family illness or loss of a loved one that has caused a kind of radical shift in ways of living or outlook. So that's kind of one set of circumstances in which people find me or come to me. And then the other is people who've just reached that point, which often starts, not least from my own experience, started in sort of, well, definitely mid to late 30s around like, is this really making me happy? Sometimes with a lot of clarity about, no, it's definitely not. And I want to do something different. And this is what I want to do. Sometimes it's just I know I'm not happy and I've no idea what I want to come next, but I know that life is for living and therefore I'm not just going to sit in this place of dissatisfaction. So both of those. Yeah. And I think I'm passionate about it partly because, I mean, Neon is all about living fully. That's what I'm about. Just kind of desperately want, you know, we have such a short time on this planet. And so I'm personally very much about kind of making the most and wanting to live well, which doesn't necessarily mean it's kind of jam-packed full of stuff, but wanting to find a way to live well and really, really wanting that for other people. I think there's so many reasons why, because of fear, because of expectation, because of routine, people, you know, we tend to stick with what we have because we don't believe that anything else is possible. Yeah. And I really, you know, I really believe that there is always something more that is possible. And that's a lot of what my work in New Beginnings is about.
Oh, that's wonderful. I when you were saying that, I was thinking it's very, very relevant to my life and probably a lot of the people that are listening. I remember reading a quote, can't remember where it's from. And it said by the age of 35, 95% of us is borrowed. And that's because we've spent around about that time. That's when we go through this process, isn't it? Is it called individuation? Is that a familiar word to you?
Well, individuation, I don't know. I thought individuation meant kind of becoming more of yourself as opposed to maybe being part of what your surroundings have wanted from you or expected from you.
Yes, yeah. That's it. So it does make sense. I think it was in the book Finding Your Element, Ken Robinson. I'm not sure, but I think it could have been. But this idea around about that time, that early midlife, maybe the process starts, where we're starting to think, hang on a minute, I'm living this life that I don't know where it came from. And it actually came from other people or society telling us that we need to live, we need to get married and have children and then have this job and then have this house and then pay for this. And then you suddenly go, you turn around and you go, hang on, I don't need any of that, or don't want any of that. Or how do we then start the process of getting back to ourselves? I think that's what you're helping people with, getting back to themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And interestingly, you know, even in my leadership work in organisations, I work with so many people who, because the question of purpose, you know, what is my life about? What is my work about? What is my leadership about? Is really key. And it's, you know, a central part of leadership development work. And so often I find myself posing that question to individuals or groups of individuals in leadership development processes. And then people sort of, there's this horrified look on their faces because either the last time they asked themselves that question was well, maybe they've never asked themselves that question, or if they did, it was about 20 or 30 years ago, and now they realise that they have no flipping idea, except they do know that probably what they're doing is not it, you know, and they're, you know, and, yeah. So I kind of feel like in my leadership work, coaching is a bit of an act of sabotage in a way, or it's a subversive activity, because often people who end up working with me in a leadership development context leave their corporate jobs because they, you know, it's just like, who would want to live like that, really? Really? I didn't. I left. That's, you know, I was a management consultant at one point, and I made a bid for life by leaving.
That question, what is your purpose? It's such an important one, isn't it? And I remember one of the first talks that I gave, and it must have been about 10 years ago, and I started it with somebody asked me, it was a friend of mine who asked me that around about that time, I think it was about 38 at that point, he said, what's your purpose in life? And he asked me that, and I was like, oh, I don't know, I have to think about that for a couple of years. So I thought about it for a couple of years. And then I started public speaking way out of my comfort zone, but I knew I needed to do it. I opened the talk with that. And I said, I've been thinking about it for a while. My purpose is to share beautiful, quiet places with people. Now, that was nonsense, actually. That was me coming up with a purpose, trying to think, what is my purpose? Okay, well, this is what I do. So this is what I share. I share these images of Quiet Scotland. So I said, well, that's my purpose. But it wasn't. It's taken me another 10 years to realise, or to work on that and to consciously think, what is my purpose? All the time I'm thinking that. Yeah. So it's not like you can't just go, yeah, that's my purpose in life. It takes so long, doesn't it, to find it?
So it takes so long, and it also evolves, doesn't it? It kind of changes. And
it does.
It's an organic thing. Yeah.
So tell me, if I was to ask you, what's your purpose?
My purpose is to enable people to live, work and lead well. So in the context of new beginnings, it's about supporting people to live well. And I have my definition of what that looks like. Mm-hmm. But obviously, everybody needs to find their own definition of what that looks like. And that in itself is sometimes the substance of what the coaching process is about. And for me, it's all in service of creating a more deeply human world. That's really what I'm about, is creating a more deeply human world where people live, you know, from a place of their deep humanity and what is true for them rather than what other people want or expect from them, where organizations are a force for good and have deeply human cultures, and where we're all in service of something that is for the greater good, basically, a kind of a collective force for good. That's my purpose, in my own little way, in my own little corner of the universe.
Yeah, because we can only do what we can do, you know, and the thing that is our purpose, we've got to really concentrate on it and not think, well, oh gosh, there's all these other things that we should be doing or could be doing. When you look at other things like maybe, you know, helping out poor countries, or the people that, you know, are in war zones, or the doctors, and there's all these big things that are just incredible. And then you go, well, I just help women find themselves through creativity and help them live this life, you know, that's in line with their values. And it's small, isn't it? It's small, but it's so important, because people are living this life, and it's very similar to what you're doing, actually.
Yeah.
But in a different way, slightly. But to change somebody's life, or to help somebody live a happy life, is huge, isn't it?
It's huge. It's huge, yeah. And it's really nice for me to hear you say that, because, you know, I sometimes think, God, you know, maybe I should be, I don't know, signing up to go and help in the Ukraine, or maybe I should, you know, am I really making any difference whatsoever? But then, you know, hearing you say that reminds me of the thanks that I get sometimes from clients of mine for whom the process has been completely transformative, and who are in a completely different space in relationship to themselves, in relationship to others, in relationship to the world, in relationship to their working lives, whatever it might be. And I kind of think, gosh, you know, if we all had the ability to just make that kind of impact on one person's life, then, you know, that's pretty cool. And it sounds like, you know, you and I do that with lots of people. So, yes. So yeah, we just do what we can, right? We do what we can.
Yeah, and there's an awful lot of lost people in the world who are just suffering. You can suffer daily with anxiety or just being unhappy or being stuck in relationships or coming out of relationships and feeling completely lost in the world and alone. And that's it's a good thing if you can help somebody with that. And I know there's a lot of women in their midlife that are going through these things on top of all the other things that happen to you in your midlife. Maybe you know your children have left home and your body's changing, your work life's changing, you can be completely lost. And I certainly know many people like that, you know, in my life that need help and the need to be encouraged to re-find themselves. And that can make the world of difference to that person. But then it springboards on, doesn't it? It springs on to their children, their relationships, their families. So it's such a valuable thing. So can I ask you, how do you go about this process? How do you help people?
It's a wonderful question. And it's, you know, coaching is a strange thing in a way, because there's no kind of formula to it. I'm the consistent thing in that people that work with me work with Kate. And so there's a particular style and approach that I have, I guess. But there's the initial part of coaching is about a kind of deep dive into the individual and giving them the opportunity to sometimes simply tell, but often kind of excavate, if you like. Like, it's like a kind of process of them digging into themselves and sometimes surprising themselves at what's there and how they feel about it. I mean, I am somebody for whom my inner world is extremely important, and that's where my relationship with my own creativity comes in. And it's also why I love using creativity in my work, because so many people are not in touch with their inner worlds, have lost touch with it, or who were never taught or encouraged to be in touch with it. And creativity for me is something which enables people to explore and express those parts of themselves which otherwise are not accessible to them. So yeah, so there's a, and the process of sort of self-discovery, I guess, is intrinsic to the whole process. But essentially, there's an initial period of relationship building and deep diving into the individual, what their goals are for the process, where they're at, some aspects of reflecting back and how they've got there. I often use a tool called the Enneagram, which some listeners might be familiar with, which is a developmental tool and a very kind of in-depth one, kind of soul level, I think. And then I will develop and propose a coaching program to people, which will consist, amongst other things, of a number of invitations, if you like, things that I will be inviting people into, some of which are usually creative practices of one kind or another. So yeah, so maybe I'm sure we'll get into the kind of the creative part of it. And programs with me last a minimum of 6 months. There are some people who have been working with me for 2, even 3 years, but for the most part, the kind of minimum is 6 months. And that's because if you want to bring about some kind of major change in your life, it doesn't happen overnight. Sadly, it takes a while. And they're the people that I really want to work with. But, you know, superficially, I mean, simplistically, coaching involves a series of one-to-one conversations over a six-month period, which can be 99% of them are now virtual, because I work with people all over the place and COVID has kind of changed all of that. And it's partly about the conversations that happen in the sessions, but it's much more about being in a process of change. So it's also a lot about, you know, what individuals do at the invitation of the coach in between those sessions, which can be all manner of things.
Brilliant. I love it, because I am the biggest fan ever of going and getting, not help, what's the word? Going support. And seeking out support. That's it. Support. I just think it's so, so valuable. And it doesn't matter if you're having a crisis or you're not having a crisis. It can be either. I think that we need to, seek others out, the right people. It's got to be the right people to coach us and to support us in life. And I've been doing it probably since I I've always done it, actually. If I could find a therapist or a counsellor or a coach or somebody that I resonated with, I will go to them. And I think that has changed so much in my life in different ways. Everybody brings something different.
Yeah.
Things aren't always quite right. But I think it's a funny thing with you know, the therapy is different to what you're doing. But I saw a life coach once and she gave me certain things. I've seen different counsellors and therapists, and they're at different times in my life, and they've always been important to me. Even sometimes they're important to me. I had one recently through, it was actually, I don't know if I should be saying this. I had one recently through a charity in Inverness called Connecting Carers. And I was struggling at the time with my son. It was a few years ago, and life overwhelm. And they gave me some sessions with this wonderful lady. And it was just talking. She just listened to me. And actually, she supported me through this time when I was questioning, do I give up my house in Drumnadrochit and move to Harris? Because that's what I truly, truly wanted to do. And I knew it from my heart. And all these logistical things were pressuring me. And I was thinking, well, should I do that? Because my children are still on the mainland. My partner's on the mainland. It's ridiculous. Mm. But actually, when you put everything down on paper, it made perfect business, financial and emotional sense for me as a person.
Yeah.
So I needed to bounce that off somebody who wasn't a friend. It wasn't a family. It wasn't, you know, somebody impartial. And she was the most wonderful person. She didn't do that much. We just chatted every so often. So that's just one example. But I'm a big believer in coaching of any sorts. I'll do business coaching. I'll do as much as I possibly can get, because I think it's important, isn't it?
Yeah. It's funny because coaching is still a relatively new industry, isn't it? I guess it's probably, I don't know, 30 years maybe. And there's loads of people out there who call themselves coaches, some of whom have zero training and zero experience, and some of whom are extremely, extremely skilled. And I think there's still some confusion out there about, you know, what's the link between therapy and coaching. And depending on the coach, you might get quite a different experience. But, you know, essentially coaching is much more kind of forward looking. But, you know, certainly in terms of the way that I coach, you know, I work in depth with people. So, you know, the conversation doesn't go along the lines of what's the new beginning that you want? Oh, I want to, you know, move to the Outer Hebrides. Okay, well, let's just brainstorm how you're going to get there. That's not how the conversation goes. The conversation, you know, it might start with, let's look first of all at what's really important about that for you. Kind of what is it that you really, what is calling you in that? Kind of which are the parts of you that know that that's the right thing for you, and which are the parts of you that are worried about that or resistant to that? And you know, and so we get into the insides of somebody and the different parts of themselves that are often in conflict. The deep bit, exactly. And also the creative bit.
I think, I
was just going to say, new beginnings are about creativity. Coaching is about creativity. You know, we're kind of the coaching for me is a creative process where two people are leaning into a relationship in service of creating something new, new possibilities for the coachee. And new beginnings, obviously, are a creative process of kind of bringing something new into being. And one of the things that I think people in my experience often struggle with is wanting to know the exact end point before they embark on the new beginning. It's like, well, I don't know exactly. I need to be really, really clear about what the new beginning is going to look like, what the end point is going to look like before I feel able to take a step across the threshold. It's a bit like saying, I want to know exactly what this painting is going to look like before I put the first brush of paint on the page, you know? Or I want to know exactly what this poem or this book or this song is going to read or sound like before I make the first note. It's just like, I love David White. I use poetry a lot of my own and proper poets in my work. And David White is one of my favourite poets. And there's a poem called, I think it's called Start Close In, which is, you know, it's just saying, think about the first step and then the second. Don't think about the third and the fourth. Just, you know, take that first step. So yeah, you know, that there's that thing about need. There's a whole lot of internal work around letting go, surrendering, both kind of holding what you want in your, as a compass point, as a direction of travel, but also being able to allow something to emerge, you know, and trusting the process, you know, which is so hard. You know, I've been there myself and it's so hard sometimes. It can be really hard.
Yeah, so a couple of things there. I think that's where we're going into that sort of fear of failure, isn't it? That we don't just, you know, that the people that don't fear failure so much are much more likely to just go and try it, and it will be one thing or the other. But it is it's a very difficult thing, isn't it? That fear of not knowing the outcome, as you said. I like that analogy. Yeah, I'm not going to paint because I don't know if it's going to be good at the end of it.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, so I'm going to wait until I'm crystal clear about what. Yeah.
Yeah, and creativity, so much of creativity is like that, isn't it? You do have to just go and just do it, and it's about letting go of the outcome and the need for it to be perfect. Once you let go, you can create freely.
Yeah.
And then it's so, so powerful, isn't it?
It is a complete leap of faith, isn't it? And, you know, and obviously kind of a leap of faith in terms of, you know, I write songs and sing and I write poetry. Okay. And I have this practice called visual medicine, which is a very niche thing, but is essentially a kind of painting and a creative and spiritual practice, basically, which I also use a lot in my work. And with all of these things, there is just that, being able to step across the threshold and just allow yourself to let go, which I guess the stakes are much lower than in life, where, you know, you're worried about, am I going to make the wrong decision? Am I going to let my family down? Am I going to, I don't know, end up living in the Outer Hebrides and shivering in the winter and thinking these winters are absolutely desperate. I wish I was back in Manchester, or I don't know, whatever. Or I'm going to leave this job and I'm never going to find another job that is all of those things. The stakes, I get that the stakes are higher, but equally, you know, when you think about the importance of us living lives and being well in our lives, then you know, a lot of the work that I do is about giving people the courage and the confidence to take the leap in, you know, in bite-sized chunks, maybe going at a pace that's comfortable for them. But yeah.
Okay. So can you tell me when we're doing this sort of work, when we've got this real sense of purpose and we are doing it as well as you clearly are, and you've got such a passion for it, it comes from a place of having been there yourself, or having empathy or some sort of understanding for this. So do you mind telling us, is there something in your life that set this off?
Yes. Well, I think it's partly always been in me, I guess, that I've always had a kind of, I don't know if it's a restless spirit exactly, but a kind of an unwillingness to settle. So, and on the one hand, it's something that I'm proud of, if you like. I kind of see as part of my independent spirit and my determination to kind of, you know, to live well. You know, I almost kind of see that as something that might end up being written on my gravestone. But it also it's also kind of created challenges for me, because it's meant that I have had to, well, there's a whole raft of new beginnings in relationships and in work that I have had, that I've chosen to navigate my way through. So, you know, professionally, I guess this is the third stage of my career, because the first part of my career I was trained as a social worker and a probation officer and worked with offenders in the criminal justice system. Second, and then I, after 10 years, it seems to have happened in 10-year kind of chapters, then I became joined a management consulting firm, so quite a radical change. And then after 10 years of doing that, I left in order to set up my own business. So there have been sort of three reinventions, if you like, in professionally, but personally as well. I mean, for example, I think at the age of, I found turning 40, I'm now 53, I found turning 40 incredibly difficult. I found turning 50 fabulous. I had an absolute celebration. But turning 40, I think there was something about, as a woman, the relationship that I was in at the time had just ended. I'd just come back from a sabbatical, a year off traveling in wild, beautiful places in Africa that I'd absolutely loved, but was back in the management consulting firm, which by then I knew I did not want to be at anymore. And I was, there was definitely that sense of, oh God, you know, I'm starting again in personally, and feeling like my identity as a woman was changing, suddenly feeling like I'd become invisible as far as my sexuality and femininity was concerned. And finding that, I found that an incredibly difficult period. So, you know, and I guess that was in 2012, I think. No, 2009, 2010. And it took me another few years before I, for example, found the courage to leave my consulting job. You know, but that whole period of kind of facing a lot of uncertainty and a lot of soul searching and I remember likening that period to feeling like, especially when I ended up, even when I found the courage to leave my consulting job, it was as though I'd moved into a vast, massive new house, which was huge, but completely undecorated, no furniture. It was just completely empty. And I was just completely daunted about how, oh my God, on the one hand, I've got all this freedom now and opportunity, but I where do I start? Like, I don't even know what colours I want on the walls. I don't know, because I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. You know, I talked a lot about I want to be more creative. That was my thing. I was saying I'm going to be more creative and I'm going to work more in depth with people. But that was it. I definitely didn't have a plan. I had a dream, but not a plan. A bit like Martin Luther King. He didn't have a plan, did he? He had a dream. I'm not likening myself to Martin Luther King. Let me see. We made that clear. But, you know, I had a yearning. I had a longing for a different kind of life. But I didn't know exactly what it was going to look like or how to get there. So, and I didn't. Well, I did have a coach at one point, actually, during that process. But yeah, having someone to accompany you through that somewhat treacherous and tumultuous territory of change can be really, really special and really powerful, I think.
Yeah, and I suppose what you're saying there is it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because it doesn't have to be massively dramatic, the things that happen to us. We all go through times, don't we? That we all go through these changes, and they can be lots of little changes, like a new house. I got a little bit stressed a couple of months ago with my house because I was like, oh my goodness, I've got to get it all decorated so I can move the furniture across. And there was this process I had to go through, and it's like, oh, how do I cope with all this, you know? And it's navigating these small things as well as the yeah. bigger things that can happen. And everybody does that. So what we're talking about here is not for specific people that have had some massively traumatic change in their lives. It's literally for everybody. And it's literally for everybody who wants to live more in line with their true way of living that they want to. And that looks yes. different for everybody, doesn't it? We stay stuck, don't we? I think that's what you're saying. And it's so true. I see it a lot. People stay stuck.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, it's that. I mean, it is for those people for whom, as I said, something kind of major might have happened. But also, you know, I think this is Joseph Campbell in this hero's journey. You know, the kind of American, was he a philosopher who talked about the hero's journey? And sometimes there's that call to adventure. There's that voice in your head that is whispering. Yeah. There's something more. I just feel that there's something more than this. And some yeah. people come to me being really clear about what that something more is, and they want help in kind of creating that in their lives. And some people come just in that place of dissatisfaction or having a yearning or a longing for something different, but having no clue as to what it is or what it might look like. And all of those are kind of common experiences of people, the people that I work with. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about the creative side of things then. So do you use creativity as a tool to help people?
Yeah, it's not the only tool that I use, and also it depends quite a lot on the people that I'm working with and kind of what their preferences are. But visual medicine is something that I'm using increasingly. So visual medicine is a practice that was developed by a very wonderful very wise, wonderful, fabulous woman called Suzette Clough, who is an artist and psychotherapist based in North London. And she developed this practice, which she calls a creative spiritual practice, which combines painting with meditation and journaling and personal development. But it's a form of painting that is literally accessible to anybody that is able to scoop paint onto a page and choose which colors they want to combine. It's and guaranteed to generate beautiful results. And it also has, I mean, the paintings are often, they often look like satellite images of landscapes or seascapes, and an incredibly powerful invitations to the imagination, and Suzette would say to the soul. So this practice is something that she's developed, so there's the painting practice itself, which is literally, you know, it's acrylic paints, and you scoop, you dampen the paper, and then you choose the colors, and it just does its wonderful thing. But then you use the paintings almost as a way of dialoguing with yourself. You know, there's a way of asking questions, and then using the paintings to help you inquire into the question that you're asking. So it's a practice that I now do regularly myself, but it's also something that I am increasingly bringing into my work with people, because even kind of showing people, sharing paintings that I've done with people, even over Zoom, and then inviting them to use the painting as a way of exploring some aspect of a question that they're tackling, is amazing what can come out of that. You know, stuff wow. like people are like, even you might say initially, you know, can we just try something using this painting? And they'd be like, yeah, okay. And feeling a bit skeptical. And then the next minute they're saying, you know, thinking of a conversation I had recently with somebody that was saying, I would love to live in that fuchsia pink. There was this kind of splash of kind of magenta pink in the painting. And it led to a whole conversation about how much she longed for adventure and travel and to be out of the city and to be, you know, I use the visual medicine practice. I use writing practices quite a lot. I use free writing, quite a lot of Julia Cameron's The Artist Way stuff, and kind of morning pages, kind of wild writing type exercises. There are some people who have specific creative projects that they want to kind of work on. But really, I'm interested in finding creative practices that enable people to explore more parts of themselves, express different parts of themselves, become more like treating new beginnings as like paint spreading on a page, rather than some kind of need to control, need to decide, need to push and drive. It's just like, how about we approach this new beginning like the paint spreading on a piece of watercolor paper? Now, what would that be like? What does that make possible for you? It's much more easeful, it's much more playful, it's much more joyful. So creativity is, you know, I also use visualization a lot, embodiment stuff, which is, you know, creativity in it. I wouldn't call embodiment creative exactly, but kind of different, not just talking practices, if you like, not just conversation.
Fabulous. I even love the phrase visual medicine.
Yeah.
I think it's just brilliant. I really, really do, genuinely. I think it would be nice to have a discussion with you another time about maybe coming up to my festival, where we run a creative festival every year.
Well, I'd love that. I'd love to. And also we're running, I've teamed up with a fellow coach who is also a forest bathing instructor.
Oh.
And she and I are going to start in October as the first one, running retreats that combine visual medicine with forest bathing. Because there is a kind of an amazing sort of crossover between the two. And they're really about enabling people to find a deeper sense of connection with themselves. I think, you know, there's also, you were talking about people being lost. You know, we can spend our whole time kind of desperately trying to find answers or a sense of well-being by grabbing at things in the external world. You know, even things like bloody Netflix and the next promotion, and yet, you know, our view is, what if we look inside ourselves for that greater sense of connection? And visual medicine and forest bathing, what the natural world, painting and the natural world, are beautiful, easily accessible portals through which, I mean, I know that I personally access a deeper sense of well-being and connection in nature and in the in my own creative expression than I do really in most other parts of my life, if I'm honest. So yeah. we're keen to share that with people.
Oh, wonderful. You just kind of summed it up there, I think. I think it's a good time to end. But I think we'll be hearing more from you anyway, in various forms. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. It was really lovely to speak to you.
It's lovely to speak to you, Margaret. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.